to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Stephen Lewis. Stephen is a ghostwriter, journalist, podcaster and self-publishing Kindle author with two Amazon top 10 best-selling guides to Sydney. He blogs at Talius.com and this week released an article about publishing and ebook predictions in 2012, which we're discussing today. So welcome, Stephen.
Hi, Joanna. Thank you very much. You make me sound like I'm a master of nothing. That's fantastic. I may have to refine my bio.
Well, you and me both, mate, because, you know, we both do all of these things. And, you know, I'm a great follower of your blog. I think it's excellent. So that's you know, you've got this great article and people can go and look at that. I'll put the link up. But one of the things that one of the people said on there is that 2012 is the year things get bad for, you know, properly bad for the traditional publishing industry. And, you know, and my thoughts, because I came from the Future Book Conference this week, is it bad for everyone, or is it that we're seeing a split between publishers who are not doing anything and publishers who are going digital? What do you think?
I think the tough part for publishers who are going digital is that I give sessions, talks, seminars on self-publishing. And as I said, one of the things I find frustrating is that everyone thinks books should be free now because you don't have to load them in a truck and drive them to the bookstore, like that was the only cost ever involved in publishing a book, which is, of course, nonsense. You've got the time you spend writing the book, the research for the book. Maybe you had to climb the highest mountain in the remotest part of the world and wait for a month for the oracle to appear. So there's a lot of cost. But with this pressure on prices, because everyone thinks an ebook should be 99 cents, is making it really hard for people who employ, you know, designers and formatters and editors and PR people and all of that expense that goes into it, that now apparently you have to recoup from, you know, the $2.99 that people think at the outside is a reasonable price. I think that's the real problem.
Well, that's interesting because, again, at Future Book, they did a lot of statistics about what they've been looking at. And they actually found that a $4.99 price was the sweet spot, which I thought was very interesting. And actually, I've recently raised my own prices up to $2.99, I believe, in order to try and play with this. I guess what I think is going to happen is that people who embrace digital will be doing clever things. And I'm quite happy to pay up to $10, I think, or I guess £10, which is more than $10. But yeah. I disagree. I think people will continue to pay more, but they're not going to pay print book prices. That's true.
But I think even at $4.99 as the sweet spot, you know, the publisher is getting, say, 70% of that $4.99. You've still got a lot of cost that is loaded into that you would have perhaps made more on with a physical book. Because what they're saying is they're prepared to pay $4.99 for a big name author.
Yeah.
And what makes you a big name author? It's the machine of the publisher behind you. And now they have to run that machine on a lot less cash. I think that's going to be really tough.
So do you see actually more companies folding, more publishing companies folding, or more of them opening up to self-publishing like Penguin has recently?
Well, if you can call that opening up to self-publishing, please pay us a lot of money and we'll publish your book. I mean, they opened up to what used to be old school vanity publishing. I think you are going to see more fold, which none of us wants. I think it's really important people understand self-publishers do not want to see bookshops shut. They do not want to see the end of publishers, but it's going to happen because you're going to have more big-name authors going, well, I've already got the name, the machinery has worked for me, and now I'm going to keep that 70% for myself. I think that's going to really put pressure on, and I think that's a real shame because publishers are gatekeepers. You know, one of my predictions for 2012 is that Amazon has to start doing something about the crap that is getting published. And I don't mean the crap that we can argue about the literary merits of. I mean the spam, the hardcore pornography. I published a book this week called Hot Silver, Riding the Indian Pacific, which is a travelogue of riding the Indian Pacific. So I was searching for it on Amazon, and I think because of the word hot, I came up with a number of books that I'm not a prude. I don't mind the existence of pornography, but I don't expect to see, you know, the F word and a rude word for describing the male genitalia in my search for a travel book.
No,
they're going to have to clean it up.
Yeah, that is a good point. Although I agree with that because some of that shouldn't be there. But we have had a lot of problems with Amazon trying to get rid of what some people think is wrong, like gay, lesbian writers
yes.
who are actually writing perfectly decent books, but because they're lesbian or gay, they've been basically banned because of some people's morality. So I guess I personally prefer to think of the gatekeeper as the customer. So, for example, if I'm browsing for a book, I won't find the crap because I browse by categories, ranking, and those books don't get the ranking. So I think one of my predictions was that the new stigma will be not selling. As opposed to who, you know, how you publish. It will be more about
yes.
whether you sell or don't sell.
I think that's true, but going back to your point about searching by category is fine, but, you know, if I tell you I've written a book called Hot Silver, you're not going to search for that by category. You're going to type Hot Silver into the search box.
Mm.
And if you're a customer, and I completely get what you're saying, I don't mind if Amazon wants to sell pornography, but I think, you know, it has to be put on a shelf somewhere else as is a kind of accepted norm, rather than exercising morality.
Amazon changing or cleaning up the way people search, perhaps, or their own. I mean, it is quite hard to navigate their site, really. But what else are we going to see Amazon do in 2012? I mean, we've just seen them buy another children's, move into children's publishing. They've got all of these imprints now. They're doing all of this stuff. Let's talk about the Kindle Select. What do you think about that? That's just happened in the last week.
I think I've just written a 2,000-word blog post on it because I just went and had a lot to say about it. For me, I think first and foremost, Amazon's done a fantastic thing for self-publishers. So in saying I don't like KDP Select, I'm saying I don't like it for me. I don't really like it for anyone, but I'm not saying don't do it.
Mm.
Amazon's job is to make us an offer. They've made us an offer, and I don't like it.
Maybe just explain what it is for anyone who doesn't know what it is.
So KDP Select is a way for self-publishers to get their books in front of Amazon Prime members who can borrow one book per month for an unlimited length of time as part of their subscription. So they pay $79 a year. As part of that package, they can borrow at least one book a month. Amazon has put $500,000 into a pool. And everybody who puts their book into the lending scheme and their book is borrowed gets one bite divided into that 500,000. So if 1 million books are lent in the month, everybody gets 50 cents. If 2 million books are lent, you get 25 cents. And that's part of my problem. $500,000 is not going to go a long way spread over a lot of books being borrowed.
Mm.
Also, you have to commit to having your book in there for 90 days. Amazon is only telling you what's in the pot this month. Next month, they could put $30,000 in the pot, but you're still committed to being in there, and your book is being lent for less. So as KDP Select and Amazon Prime become more and more popular, you're actually going to earn less and less money per loan of your book.
Mm. One of the things that is interesting for us is that if you join the program, so yes, you have to do the 90 days, but you can put your book for free. You have the control on the timing. And that is my biggest issue at the moment with being a self-publisher. We cannot choose the timing of when we put a book for free. And many people would like to do that. And at the moment, you have to game the system by putting it free on Smashwords and then waiting for Amazon to catch up. No control on timing at all. So, and I know a lot of people are attracted by that control.
With the KDP Select, you can have your book for free for up to 5 days out of a 90-day period.
Hmm.
So that, yes, they are giving you that, which, you know, to me just says, well, now you can offer your book for free. If it's being lent out, you're going to make a pittance. And also for 5 days, you can make it available for free. And I know a lot of authors want to do that, but I think we are training readers that books should be free. I think the whole thing about KDP Select is, if I'm an Amazon Prime customer, I'm going to get used to the idea that, hell, I give Amazon $79 a year and I should get books. Books, books, lots of books, and they should be free. And that's not good for us. I've never had a problem with Amazon not letting us put our books on for free because, as I always say to authors, they're running a service. They're making money out of their service. So if they put the books up for free, they're not making any money out of the service. So I understand why they haven't done it. I just think it's still too high a price to pay that in order to get 5 free days out of 90 days, you're putting your book into this little pot of money that is going to get divided by a number that you can't even know until the end of the month. I think people are going to be quite disappointed with what they get.
Well, and I think if they are, then, you know, to me, 90 days is not that big a deal. I mean, you know, for me, my books didn't really start selling until, you know, that after 90 days. I mean, my sales were up the third and the fourth and the fifth and the sixth month after launch. Just coming back on the free things, I don't want people to think that it's all about that. I want to point out CJ Lyons, who is a New York Times bestselling author, who wrote a post on my blog about free and how she used free for one of her books to boost the sales of all her other books. And that's generally why people do it, or they put the first one in a series. And again, it's a fiction tactic. I don't believe it's a non-fiction tactic, really. It's about a profile and selling other books.
Well, I was just going to say, not only is it a fiction-only tactic, but it presupposes that the author has another book already for sale.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or that the other book is a natural follow-on. So if you've got Amanda Hocking, she writes books in a series, brilliant marketing to make the first one free or cheap, get you into the story, fabulous. If you happen to write a detective book and then a bit of vampire fiction or something else, and those things don't go together, it doesn't work, but we are training readers. I think the book should be, cheap or free, and that's not good, particularly for those of us who write nonfiction.
Yeah, and again, it's nice that we can have this discussion because I think I disagree with that, and I always think I'm the market or whatever, but I pay a total variety of prices for what I read. I don't even get free books generally. In fact, I will always pay for a book. I don't even browse the free thing. I think there will always be a market for different types of books. But let's move on to some of the other predictions. For example, Joel Friedlander mentioned better tools for authors. What do you think is going to come in 2012? I mean, we've just had Pressbooks, which is an interesting development. Will it become easier to make apps, for example?
I don't think so. I think my background, my first business in 1994 was designing web pages for people. Back at a time when I only knew one other person with an email address, and any meeting I went to, people would go, so what is the internet? And what's the difference between a web page and email? So I've been designing web pages for a long time, and it hasn't really got a lot easier than that. So you run a blog. Do you run your blog in WordPress?
Mm-hmm.
So WordPress makes it phenomenally easy for you to do what you're doing. But you still have to know a little bit. At some point, if you really want to take charge of your WordPress site, you've got to know a bit of the HTML that's behind the scenes. And that isn't easy to do. And because e-readers are really just reading HTML, the Kindle is just a fancy web browser, and your e-book is actually just, at its heart, just a fancy web page. As we haven't made it easy to make web pages in 20 years, I don't think it's going to be that easy to make a book. And not as books get more and more complicated features. So Kindle's, Amazon's announced they're going to have this Kindle Format 8, which is going to have features in it that you simply don't have in Microsoft Word. So you're never going to be able to build your book in Microsoft Word to use those features and then get them on the Kindle. I think, however, it's going to be more appealing for people to find someone to help them. I think that's going to become cheaper. There will be tools, and there will be people who are good at using those tools. And because they can use those tools quickly, they can charge you less money. But I still think authors will struggle to do it on their own.
Yes, and I do agree with you. I think there will be a people will use more freelancers and hopefully budget for that, which is what I definitely do. But also going to the Future Book Conference, I was very struck by how some of the publishers have great ideas around transmedia, multimedia stuff. And it struck me that if you are somebody, if you're an author with an idea that could go into transmedia, there are publishers who are willing to take a punt on that type of thing. So, and that was when I thought, you know, we can't do that. As self-publishers, we cannot afford to take a risk on all this stuff. So that to me is a reason to look for a publisher.
I think you're right. I mean, I was talking to a publisher the other day and they had done an app, $50,000 it cost them to create the app. They didn't make back anything like that. Because again, let's be honest, the whole app market is down to, what do you mean it's going to cost me more than 99 cents to buy an app?
That's
or
true.
The app isn't free. If it's cost you $50,000 to build the app, you've got to shift a lot of them, with Apple taking 70% along the way, to earn back your $50,000. You might see someone who makes a really good app compiling program where your fantasy story and my fantasy story can both really be in the same app and we can bring it to life a little bit. I mean, my problem is I'm a bit fuddy-duddy. I mean, I used to write a consumer technology column in the late 90s and I once famously wrote, why would you want email on your phone? I was wrong. But I like reading a book, you know, I really do. So it's quite hard for me, to be honest, to picture this world in which I want to immerse myself in anything other than my imagination. But I still think it's going to be, even if it's not expensive in terms of the app, I think one thing authors underestimate, and you would know this, is the time it's going to take you to do all the things that you can do and really focusing on what's going to work for you. Because, I mean, I always say to self-publishers, it's a triathlon. You know, you write your book, that's stage one. You get your book published or self-published, that's stage two. And then you promote it, which is where the analogy breaks down because promotion goes on forever. And then you want to find time to write your next book. So I think that's where the cost, if you like, is going to be, is in the time to do all of these things.
Yeah, you're right. And actually, what was interesting at Future Book is I actually felt it was more the present book. And I guess what I see happening in 2012 is a more consolidation of what we are already doing. So even though you and I both you know, socialise online with people doing the same thing, we still are a small percentage, I think.
Tiny.
So there should be more people doing this next year, and as you say, most of that will be plain text, probably fiction or non-fiction with nothing exciting about it. So if we just see an expansion of that, then what we're basically saying is we have to be better at marketing. Is that it?
Yes, I think you definitely do. I mean, I think, you know, reading hasn't changed since reading was invented, and we still love it. I mean, it's still fantastic. You know, drinking with your friends hasn't changed in 200 years. We still tip it into a glass, we bring it to our mouths, and we have a laugh. Thousands of years, exactly. Some things just work as they are, and I think reading is one of them. So yes, some convergence between television and games and books, but there's been that convergence for a long time. I think there's still a lot of money and fame and recognition to be had for authors who just write books. I mean, I wouldn't want anyone to feel, oh shit, I'm not turning my detective story into an app. I'm screwed. I will never get readers. Because, you know, that isn't true. A good story is still, you know, a great thing to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely, personally, don't even want to go anywhere near that market. Not interested whatsoever. Maybe one thing that is more interesting to me is the audiobook thing. I would like to have my book on Audible, for example.
My books are on Audible.
Yeah, for me, I'm more interested in doing it as a marketing thing than for an income thing, because I understand that you don't necessarily get much money from audiobooks. Do you think it does expand your profile?
I don't know. I'm quite new into Audible myself. I mean, like you, I've been podcasting for a long time, which I do think increases your profile. Audible, they told me that 5,000 sales of a book on Audible is a bestseller. You're a blockbuster on Audible. Now, that is not to say that the Steve Jobs biography isn't going to sell hundreds of thousands of copies through Audible. But really, in their sales ranking, 5,000 is huge. Whereas when you look at someone like J.A. Conrath, who burned through that in a couple of days with his ebook sales, it's never going to compare. So I find it hard to believe that it would do a lot for you.
Okay, let's talk about some other things. So one of the things I said was that I really see Kindle, not necessarily just Kindle, Amazon moving into other markets. So for me, India is the big one that I want. What do you think about that, and when's that going to happen?
Truth be told, one of the things I find fascinating about Amazon is they do it. There's no hinting. Nobody follows them in the way that people follow Apple. You know, there's always blogs leaking rumors about Apple, and suddenly Amazon will just whack you with something between the eyes. You know, like I say, I give these self-publishing courses, and so I'm telling people something one Wednesday night. I wake up on Thursday morning to a tweet that tells me Amazon's now got a lending library.
Yeah.
So I don't think we've got any way of knowing, but I think they're kind of unstoppable, because what do they have to do to move into India that they haven't done to move into France, Italy, Japan, the UK, and so on? You know, nothing really. It's not like they're opening up physically in those countries. They're really coming to arrangements with publishers. They must be ninjas at negotiating with publishers now, and then they just turn on the KDP. So I think somebody else, and I'm going to be unfair because I can't remember who in the blog predicted the top 15 countries, I think, by GDP by the end of the year. And I think that's right. They're on a roll right now. It's quite offensive here in Australia. They haven't bothered.
You get the American store, don't you? The Amazon.com store.
Well, you say that. We buy from the Amazon.com store, but I happened to notice the other day, because I was logged in on two different browsers, that one book was, if I was coming in from an Australian address, i.e. if it had account details that said I lived in Australia, the book was 30% cheaper to buy it from me in Australia, which is not what we Australians understand is the case. We believe that we pay more for everything.
Yeah.
So it was... And I think, in terms of predictions, that's a big one. I think Amazon and publishers are going to have a really hard time continuing to explain to me in Australia, or really more accurately, why someone in New York is paying more for a Michael Connelly book or a Stephen King book, as it was, than some guy in Australia is paying for it. Seems hard to justify.
And we have VAT, so sales tax, on ebooks and not print books. So you quite often find ebooks significantly more expensive than print. Ridiculous.
That's outrageous. I mean, that really is ridiculous.
Exactly.
So I think we're going to see advertising in ebooks. I've certainly considered it myself. And I think we are going to see it, because I think because of this downward pressure on price, you are going to see people saying, well, if I can get Tesco to advertise on page 30 of my book, I'm going to put it in there. Particularly with Amazon putting ads on the Kindle, in the ad-supported Kindle, which is the one that I've got, which I love. I mean, the ads are fantastic. I got advertised the other day, get one of these thrillers for $1. Fantastic, I'm in. Thank you very much. Thank you for the ad. That was great. So I think in David's case, the idea that you might see advertising in books is not a strange idea. Because authors have to make a living.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, that reminds me of what Seth Godin did for some of his books on the Domino Project. Is he basically got a company to sponsor the book and then put it out for free.
That's right. And why wouldn't you? The reader wins. I mean, we all accept reading fiction in the New Yorker. We're going to turn the page and see an ad. It's not going to be radically different for people. It's not like putting ads on the BBC or, you know, in NPR or whatever. Maybe NPR has ads and I'm getting too clever for myself. but the BBC certainly doesn't. Why not? Why in my walking tour of the rocks would it be completely unacceptable to say, and now you've rounded this corner and here is an advert for the shop that's selling coffee and here's a discount for you to get a coffee. You know, you win, I win. You've got a cheaper book and you've got, you know, a relevant offer to you at the time. I think we may well see more of that. I mean, it's funny almost to speculate on who'd be advertising and whose books, for instance, you know, so sort of Glock advertising in a Stephen Leather thriller, for instance.
Well, that's true. And actually, thinking about it from a blogging perspective, I mean, obviously there are like Commission Junction and various sites that as bloggers you can go and join in an advertising network, affiliate promotion, I guess. There is no reason why that couldn't happen where you would almost go and join in an advertising campaign, put it in your book, and then see what happened with it, I guess.
Well, I've said, I wrote a book called In Book Promotion because I do think a lot of authors, and this really includes traditional publishers, are not using their Kindle books properly to promote themselves and their books because, as I said earlier, your Kindle book is essentially a web page. It can link to wherever you want it to, including your other books. How many publishers I read say, I've also written the following five books, which I have not bothered to link to the Kindle store for you to just click and buy now.
Yeah.
Mental. But why nobody's ever approached me to say, hey, Stephen, I also write travel guides. How about you put a page at the end of your book saying, look, if you've enjoyed Hot Silver Riding the Indian Pacific, this guy's also written a great donkey ride through the Grand Canyon that I think you'll also find enjoyable. You know, because my books are for armchair travelers as much as it doesn't have to be I'm going to, you know, ride this train. But no one's ever approached me to ask me to do it.
I have actually been involved in several discussions with people about that. And for me, the problem is really trying to ascertain what are the good books to pair with. Because, for example, you know, I have some religious aspects to my books, but they're not Christian. So I don't think pairing with a Christian author is a good idea. Equally,
yes, that's right. Yes, yeah. From Pentecost to understanding the New Testament.
Yeah, exactly. And then equally, I don't want to be offensive to Christians because it's not. It's respectful. It's just not Christian. So I don't want to be paired with a book that is anti-Christian. Do you know what I mean? So it's difficult. So one has to be very careful who you end up pairing with. But of course, now I'm going to have more than one book, so I'm going to be linking myself.
That's right. And push the two.
So I'm interested just on...
We'll see more of that.
This last week I learnt, because I'm now using Scrivener to write my books, and I just discovered that...
I bet you're thrilled.
Oh, it's brilliant. But I just discovered that Scrivener does have a export format to Kindle.
Yes,
Demobi. Is that something you've used?
I love Scrivener with an absolute passion. I tell everyone to buy it. It makes me upset that I can't go back in time to all the years I spent writing stuff in Word and say to myself, no, there's a thing called Scrivener, do it now. So I love it with a passion, but I found, because I know how to format my Kindle books, you know, really down to how I want them to look, it doesn't give me the granularity of control. I want to get in there and go, I want that chapter heading exactly this far from the top of the Kindle. I'm not Steve Jobs. I'm not a ludicrous perfectionist, but I want that kind of control. But that said, if you're not going to learn how to format your own Kindle books, I would definitely go from Scrivener to Mobi than to go from Word to HTML. I would definitely do that. I don't know how well it handles it if you want to put pictures in and that sort of thing, how much control you, because a lot of my books have pictures in as well. And I think it's important when we talk about the Kindle that people understand, if you take Hot Silver, for instance, I mean, yes, there are pictures of the Indian Pacific in it, but I've also used chapter dividers in a particular font. So I've had to have those as images. So while it's not a picture in the sense you might understand, it has to be treated as a picture in the book. So I have to know how to use that. But look, I'd go and give Scrivener a go a long time before I went and tried to put something through Smashwords, for instance.
Now, let's talk about that, because we've talked mainly about Amazon and Kindle, which, of course, we all know is the bulk of the sales. But I was really interested to find Kobo at the Future Book Conference with some quite cool things to do with their, I think it's called Pulse, where they have like a social network on the book, so you can interact on the book. It has great statistics for authors, so you can tell when people stopped reading, for example.
Oh, yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, amazing statistics. And I was looking at that going, whoa, I don't even really know anything about Kobo. And then, of course, Nook Color. I've heard from the Americans that Nook Color far surpasses the Kindle Fire. So what do you think we're going to see from these other players in the market? Are they going to challenge Amazon?
I think it's going to be nearly impossible to challenge Amazon. I think it's just too, you know, Amazon is the Hoover of vacuuming. I mean, people just understand it. Oh, it's a Kindle. I'm going to buy a Kindle. because people don't distinguish, you know, in that sort of way. So, you know, just like people say, I've got a PC, they don't really know whether it's a Dell or an HP. Mm. So if you tell people, get an e-reader, they're going to go and get a Kindle. So I think that's going to be really quite hard. And Amazon's reach and the number of titles that it's got, I think the game is Amazon's to lose. Mm. So as an author, I've said a lot that Amazon, we are all online marketers. You know, as soon as you become a self-publisher, you're an online marketer. That is what you're doing. Because if nothing else, your book has a page on Amazon. That is online. You are marketing your book. Online marketing is better than other forms of marketing, or easier in a sense, because of all the data that you can get. How many people visit your page? How many people? How long do they stay there? Mm. Amazon doesn't share any of those data with us. So I salivate at the idea that I could work out, where am I losing my readers? Mm. Or if Kobo is prepared to say, listen, 100 people download your samples, but only 5 of them go on to buy the book. Mm. Right, what's wrong with my sample? You know, what can I do? Can I test? Can I try putting a different beginning? I mean, I'm not saying rewrite your book. I'm saying you might find that maybe having the about the author part at the beginning gets people more excited about your book. Mm. Or it's boring and people don't want to read it. You know, who knows? But the experimenting that you can do. So that would make me quite excited about getting on the Kobo as an author. Mm. But I think as a reader, they've got a real uphill struggle. Because Amazon is also selling its devices at less than cost.
Yeah,
it's not easy for other people to compete with a loss leader like that.
Mm. No, absolutely. I agree. And, you know, as I sit here, I don't have a Kobo or a Nook. Or I have a Kindle.
That's right.
You know, so
I think would like to see competition for Amazon, though. I mean, don't get me wrong. And just because I think Amazon's a bit of an immovable object at the moment, I believe very strongly that is a bad thing.
Mm.
Because Amazon is being lovely and very generous to us all right now with 70% royalty, or even 35% is a decent royalty. But, you know, that's not promised to us in the future.
Mm.
They could quite easily turn around and play hardball later.
Mm. And then just wanted to ask you about, you know, from the perspective of indie authors, at the moment, as a non-US publisher, we can't go direct to Pubit, for example. We still can't do that. We still can't get on Scribd or Scribd, as they're called. I don't have a clue how you get on Kobo, to be honest. So really, our options are Smashwords, and now I believe BookBaby would be the only other competitor. Do you see any other options for self-publishers?
Well, I think Smashwords will get you on the Kobo, won't they?
Yeah, that's what I mean. True. But the option is it's Kindle and it's Smashwords and or BookBaby. That's it. That's our option.
That's right. I don't see any others. And I think it's, you know, when I talked about Amazon maybe filtering out some of the stuff later on, if you look at what Apple's done, you have to go through someone else. And it's the same with their music. They have decided we're going to outsource quality control to somebody else and they can make money out of doing that.
Mm.
And maybe these other publishers are looking, for instance, at the amount of detritus that is sort of washing into Amazon and going, well, maybe we need somebody else to run a filter over this for us and that they can make money doing that and stay out of the way. And I think, again, that will be very difficult because BookBaby, as I understand it, it's a bit like an oil tanker steering your book that way. If you want to change price or you want to see your sales figures, you can't access any of that because BookBaby is the publisher, not you.
Right.
And I think a lot of people don't realize that when they take their books through BookBaby.
Mm.
There is a price to pay for going that way, and it is that you don't have, you know as well as I do, you can be in the KDP every 5 minutes checking your sales figures, and I am. So the idea with BookBaby that I can't even change my price easily or for free, you know, with the KDP, you can change your price, you know, daily if that's your wish. So to lose that control is going to be really hard.
Mm.
But maybe those companies don't want to make it easy for us to get in there.
Yeah, and I mean, I am a great fan of Smashwords. I've known Mark for several years now, and I really respect what he's done. And he was the first to open up to non-US publishers before Amazon did. And he pays with PayPal, which is brilliant, you know.
Yes, so that's right.
I really see that perhaps someone like Mark of Smashwords will improve their own platform to a point where it becomes more competitive, because it is clunky, it is hard to use right now.
And I think that's really hard because you're taking a guy, Mark, who is passionate about books, who started this because he's passionate about books. And I don't think we appreciate the huge back-end investment. It is hard enough to get Pentecost from manuscript onto the Kindle and then promote it and run it. Imagine trying to run Smashwords without venture capital and all these authors emailing you every day going, Mark, I can't work out how to use styles in Word. It must be a phenomenal, you know, undertaking, and I don't think we appreciate that. And to take it to the next level, I think would require a huge investment.
No,
I hope he finds himself able to make.
Yeah, I hope so too, because I still think it is the you know, we all pretty much go direct to Amazon, but the rest of it we do on Smashwords.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. With Apple, for example. I like being on the Apple iBookstore, but I make practically nothing from it, to be honest.
Me too. I stopped bothering with any of the other stores. So I really only sell on Amazon at the moment, simply because I found it too hard. And I fell into price matching because I make so little on the other platforms. I stopped looking at Smashwords.
Yeah.
So when I changed my price on the KDP, I forgot to change my price on Smashwords. So Amazon found that out and never raised the price of my book as I wanted them to, which is entirely fair enough on Amazon's part. I was in breach of the terms, but I didn't realize it. So I just found out as I was making the vast majority of my money through Amazon, I would focus on doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is why, going back to KDP Select, the 90-day thing is not a problem to me. That's not one of the reasons I worry about it.
No, I know what you mean, and it'd be I'm interested to see what's going to happen in a month's time when we have a month of data. You know, it's all very well having a couple of days worth of data, but we need to see what happens to the authors who get in there and do it before we can judge.
Well, that's right, because each person is going to get paid the same, which I also think is wrong. I mean, if you take one of my Sydney walking tours, these are slender books; they're about 8,000 words. And in my blog post, which is going out tomorrow, I sort of compare that to Sebastian Younger's War. He went to Afghanistan. He lived there for months. He ran the risk of dying. Why on earth should I get the same amount of money as he gets for my slender volume? I'm not saying about whether he ran the risk of death, but I'm saying mine is a very slight pamphlet-length book. His is a great work. That doesn't seem right to me.
But it doesn't stop us selling books as well. The Select is just another way of, you know, getting to Amazon Prime members. And from what I understand, most people are not Amazon Prime members.
Not yet. But as you put your book into KDP Select, you are making KDP Select more attractive, which means Amazon will sell more Amazon Prime memberships. So there'll be more people in there, more people borrowing books. And ironically, if Amazon doesn't really increase the size of the pot, the more people borrowing books, the less you get paid.
I think the idea is the same as a library. So authors don't get, you get very little, right?
It isn't. But it is. They use the language of the library, borrowing and lending. But there is no comparison between what's happening with an ebook and borrowing. You know, when I print a physical copy of my book and it costs me, let's say, $20, you don't want to pay $20, but you'll give me $2 to borrow it for a week. I hope that I'm going to get that book back from you, lend it to lots of other people, and eventually make more than $20 on the book. With an ebook, there's nothing to return to me after you've, you know, taken the ebook. I don't, you know, it's a digital good. I can keep manufacturing them infinitely as people borrow them. So there's no borrowing, there's no coming back. And with most books that I read, I'm not going to read them again. So the difference between borrowing it and owning it is irrelevant if you're never going to read it again.
But my point was going to be that it acts, again, if you have, for example, a whole load of books and you have one that's available for lending in the same way as offering, as we talked about earlier, for free, somebody might borrow your book on a whim, try it out, like it, and then go buy the other ones. That is true.
I vehemently object to the word borrow or lend. Rent is almost a better way of describing it. But you're right. And I think people should always experiment with their stuff. They should try. So I've put a couple of my books into it because, you know, let's have a go. You know, let's see what happens. But I do fear, I really do see that price squeeze that I was talking about earlier. And I really do fear that we are teaching readers that books should be, you know, cheap to free, which isn't good for any of us. Because let's face it, nobody knows. I mean, I have a ghostwriting business, and the inquiries that I get from people who quite clearly think you can knock out a book for $200 because it takes a weekend, is quite scary. So these are people who want to write a book, who've done that much thinking about books, that they think $200 is going to cover the cost of the time it takes. So I think readers don't value what goes into the production of a book. And therefore, it's up to us to hold firm on a reasonable price.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of topics. Do you want to wrap up with any final 2012 predictions?
What did I think? I think Amazon's going to play hardball with the other stores. I think at the moment they all play quite nicely. I think this idea that if you want to be in KDP Select, you've got to agree to 90 days exclusivity could just be the first thing that we see in Amazon saying, hey, if you want to play with the big boys, you're going to have to, you know, sign a sweetheart deal with the big boys. I think that's definitely true. I think it's possible that Amazon might do something to move to a verification method to get your book published because of the amount of stuff in there that really oughtn't to be in there. Because it's their reputation on the line when a reader buys a Kindle Fire or a Kindle and gets something that is complete rubbish. It's Amazon's reputation that suffers. So you may find yourself having to pay $50 to submit your book for a quality review. I don't think that's impossible to imagine. And I think they may well start to allow serialization, which I think will be fantastic if they let people, you know, put books in and, you know, next month, you know, in the Dickens style, you know, next month you get the next installment. I think that would be fabulous.
No, well, exciting times, I think, overall, in what's going to happen for people who embrace the future.
All right. I think if you're not doing this, if you're a writer and you're not trying this, you're crazy.
Absolutely. And I would hope that everyone listening to this now is already, you know, on the wagon. If you're not on the wagon, you're seriously late.
That's right, exactly. All the big sales have gone. You're finished. The money's been taken.
Oh, no, it is an exciting time. So thanks ever so much for your time, Steve. Oh, we should say, where can people find you online?
People can find me at taelist.com, which is taelist.com.
And your books are all over the place.
Oh, that's right. Look for Stephen Lewis on Amazon and you'll find me there.
Well, thanks ever so much for your time, Stephen. That was great.
Pleasure. Great to talk to you.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.